Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description. Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw Countout. Pro Wrestling Countdown Show right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson and available wherever fine podcasts are. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. YouTube is probably unsubscribed to you as we speak. Shouldn't be doing that, Larson. Yeah. Anyways.
Wait, I shouldn't be doing that? I'm not doing anything.
Are you Mr. YouTube?
No.
Is your name?
I'm Mr. Fun Wrestling.
Your name is Bill YouTube. You know it.
No.
Anyways, we're also available at the Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson. You can help support the show. Be part of the show. You can, man, at $20, you can get your video question up on the dirt sheet. Your ugly mug up on the dirt sheet. We're also available at prowrestlingtees.com/goinginraw. You can get that fun wrestling shirt. There's a brand new shirt.
I'll admit, it's a good-looking shirt.
It's a good-looking shirt, man. It's the Congress Under Mecha Santa shirt, of course, from the very popular WGPW Internet Wrestling series we have right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson. But today, in light of Braun Strowman in the middle of a monster push,
suffering an elbow injury that's going to require surgery, he'll be out, I think, anywhere between 4 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, which, I mean, look, the bottom line is we want Braun. Braun's going to be at SummerSlam to fight Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
He's going to lose to Brock Lesnar. Yes. We all know this is going to happen. So it's not going to keep him out that long. But still, like, he's you know, this whole Braun-Roman thing has actually been fairly entertaining.
It has been very entertaining. Absolutely. And despite the injury, I don't foresee that injury, the elbow injury, putting the brakes on Braun's push at all. However, there have been times in wrestling's history where competitors have gotten hurt and it put the brakes on their pushes really hard.
Oh yeah.
And that's what we're going to talk about today, the 10 wrestlers who had their pushes derailed by injury.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, and it's kind of, we'll talk a little bit, like there's some that we sort of left off, like for example, we didn't put Stone Cold on this list. His neck was broken by Owen Hart, a sit-down pile driver.
Well, a tombstone, essentially.
While Stone Cold was the IC champion. No, Owen was the IC champion. He was going to win the IC, and he actually did win the IC championship but via a roll-up in that match. But that did, like, nothing to derail his career. Like, that was a nasty injury. But, man, they kept him on TV in non-wrestling, sort of in a non-wrestling manner.
Yes.
And then eventually he was cleared to wrestle, and he was fine. Totally fine. Biggest draw in history.
Yes.
A couple people, like Sasha Banks, she was, like, injured at one point. But then her
yeah, she did fine. There's a couple people on here who were in the midst of a monster push, got hurt, and then eventually got back on track.
Yeah.
But just the fact that the push didn't go how it was initially intended enough to kind of derail it somewhat. Further down the list, there's people who had to retire because of their injuries.
Exactly. We'll start off with number 10, though.
10.
The most fun entry here, Fandango.
Yes, so Fandango starred in a series of vignettes leading up to WrestleMania 29, where I believe he made his in-ring debut.
Mm-hmm.
In a match against Chris Jericho.
Yeah, and he won.
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah, right.
But it's a credit to Chris Jericho that he's willing to put younger talent over.
Oh, absolutely, for sure.
And so the next night on Raw, the crowd started doing the da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. He was over. Curtis.
Big time.
Chet
Cheddarfield was over.
Yeah. And so that led to Fandango attacking The Miz on the May 20th edition of SmackDown during a match which saw Miz taking on Intercontinental Champion Wade Barrett. That started a feud between the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Fandango was supposed to take part in a triple threat match at Payback 2013 for the Intercontinental title, but he was concussed a week prior to that match on SmackDown. In a match against Zack Ryder.
Did you watch the video of that?
I watched a piece of video of the match. I couldn't find a piece of video labeled you know, Fandango concussed.
Yeah, okay, all right.
But there was a Broski boot
that
looked pretty stiff.
Ooh.
Don't know if that's when it happened.
Okay.
But if the concussion happened in that video,
yeah,
I would think that would have been it.
Right.
Anyways, Curtis Axel
mm-hmm.
Replaced Fandango in that match and won the Intercontinental title. We'll talk about Payback 2013 at least one other time during this video. It seems to be a very interesting pay-per-view in hindsight. Apparently, according to internet rumor, Fandango was going to win the Intercontinental title that night.
Yeah.
And would have been the start of maybe a push.
Yeah. Instead, I mean, look, now, you know, things are looking up for Johnny Curtis.
Yes, 4 years later.
Yeah, him and, gee, willikers, 4 years later. Him and Tyler Breeze, as Breezango, are on the heels of perhaps taking those tag titles off the Usos.
Correct.
Dude, the crowd is really loving right now.
Yes.
But the crowd really loved him back then, too. They were really into his shtick. And, you know, you were high on him back then, especially because it really came off like he was, number one, he was never a good dancer, which was kind of the hilarious thing about it.
He knew how ridiculous his gimmick was, and he was in on the joke.
Right. Exactly. And
that's what I appreciate about him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I don't know. You know, back then it was kind of, you know, that they put the IC title on guys like Curtis Axel. It was more of a, back then, it was more of a, let's put this title on a guy and see if it can help him.
Yes.
See if it can take him from being, you know, getting over a little bit to getting over a lot.
Yes.
Because I think in the case of Fandango, the da-da-da-da-da thing was kind of what was over.
Mm-hmm.
So he needed, but this is saying completely understanding that this dude, I think Fandango, is just chock full of talent. I kind of think the Fandango gimmick was just an awful idea for anybody.
Yes.
Because it's not a personality, it's a gimmick.
Yes.
And
but he was imbuing his gimmick with his personality.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Which in my eyes early on was getting it over somewhat. And if he could have used the da 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 stuff as a springboard to get the character over.
Yeah, I know.
They're it's just, a tough task.
It's a very tough task.
But, you know, given the opportunity with the Intercontinental title, that means it's guaranteed more or less TV time on a regular basis.
Because could you see, like, a legitimate world champion talking that way? I couldn't.
I don't know.
I really could. Not in this day and age, anyways. I mean, look at how rarefied the rarefied air that the world championships are in. You know, Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton have them. On the other hand, Jinder Mahal might win the world title, so who knows? Anyways, so yeah, kind of interesting to see if his career trajectory would have been all that different. Do you recall how long was Curtis Axel's run with the U.S. title?
That's
at the
back
time?
When Paul Heyman
was that when he did the so he was
his
sort
manager,
of,
so he had a decent enough run, I think.
And he was like redubbed. He was Mike McGillicuddy before that.
Yes. And they had the segment where Heyman came out and explained why they changed his name.
Yeah.
Kind of in to honor his father and grandfather.
Okay, so he beat Wade Barrett and The Miz in a triple threat.
Yeah, Payback 2013, yeah.
Okay, let's see.
I feel like he had it for at least 2 or 3 months.
Retained, defeated The Miz, made another title defense, feud with CM Punk. Yeah, I remember, I thought he had it for a little while.
Yeah, I felt like he did.
Yeah, once again retained. Here we go. Oh, he lost it to Big E, and he had it for 155 days. I remember that.
That's 5 months.
Yeah, that's 5 months. But I remember it was like the least over 5 months, the least over Intercontinental reign. They would do that with guys back then. It was
weird.
I know. But, I mean, you know, so I don't know. I don't know that it would have been interesting if he was somehow placed along the same trajectory as Curtis Axel. You know, I mean, he was, I don't know what he would have done. I mean, he really fell off. Like,
oh yeah.
He fell off big time before they paired him with Tyler Breeze.
Oh yeah.
Like there was like long chunks of time when he wasn't even on TV.
Yep.
So I think it probably would have been better for him.
Oh yes.
But to what degree, we never know.
We'll never know.
Number nine.
Nine.
Mr. Kennedy!
So,
Kennedy!
Mr. Kennedy, was kind of getting over, right?
You know, okay, so here's the thing.
This is back when I wasn't watching wrestling a ton.
For me, personally speaking, this was like a downtime of wrestling. Because you had guys like Mr. Kennedy, who I was never a fan of. I never really understood what the big deal about him was.
He had the mic that came down.
He had
from
the mic
the
that came
ceiling.
Down. That was like it. He That's had an neat. Announcer's voice.
That's neat.
That was pretty much it. You know, what's funny is that like watching the TNA channel on Pluto TV.
Yeah.
I've seen a little bit of Mr. So he was part of Aces and Eights.
Yeah, it's Mr. Anderson, right?
Yeah, and like I've seen some of that stuff, and he demonstrated a bit more character. Like I kind of got why people were into him and stuff. I definitely saw why Vince liked him, why the WWE liked him. I mean, he's a good-looking dude, good body, and he had, you know, he could talk.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah. Well, Vince liked him enough to have him win Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 23,
which
back
usually,
in 2007, that was a guarantee at that point to be champion.
Yeah, kind of. Nobody'd lost.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Yeah, I mean, only been around for a couple
and
years.
And then a couple weeks later on Raw, Mr. Kennedy announced that he would cash in his contract at
Bad
WrestleMania
idea.
24. What so he was saying, I'm going to be in the main event at WrestleMania 24.
That's a good idea, then.
His intention. A week later, May 7th episode of Raw.
So bad.
Mr. Kennedy was coerced into putting up his Money in the Bank briefcase by Edge. In a match against Edge, that match lasted about 3 minutes.
You know what's funny, dude, is that I was never a big Edge guy, but every time we talk about Edge, it makes me like him more.
It seems
and more.
Like he's always doing neat stuff.
Retroactively, Edge is amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't that great? I mean, I don't know why. I've always known it. I was watching the live sex show live. Like, I should have always been into Edge. He's always doing neat things, exactly.
And
what the heck?
During that match, Mr. Kennedy's right arm around the elbow was heavily bandaged.
Yeah.
So anyways, actually, the match itself, before the bell rang, Edge beat the hell out of Mr. Kennedy around the ringside area.
Yeah.
Bell rang, Edge delivered a spear, got the pin. The whole segment was about 2.5 minutes.
That's rad. That's so messed up.
So Edge won Money in the Bank from Mr. Kennedy.
Because if I remember correctly, Edge's goading Mr. Kennedy into putting it up really wasn't even, it didn't even take him that long to get him to do it.
Not much of a coercion.
And so Mr. Kennedy kind of just came off like a dullard.
This is the best part to me, though. Edge cashed in on The Undertaker at the next episode of SmackDown.
Again, he's pretty awesome.
Again, doing neat things.
Doing neat things.
Apparently, Mr. Kennedy had to drop the briefcase because at some point he suffered an arm injury, which was originally diagnosed as a torn right triceps.
Yeah.
Right off the bone.
That's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, and was expected to be out of action 5 to 7 months. But here's
That's
the thing.
That's awful. That's
it
so
is.
Bad.
It is, but
yeah.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 24 was more than 5 to 7 months away from the injury happening. So he still got a hell in the briefcase and still had his main event shot. That's what's kind of confusing me. Anyways, it gets more interesting.
God.
What was actually the case after, you know, further medical tests was that he had a really bad hematoma.
Yeah, they have a year to cash it in.
And he was back in like a month or a month and a half.
And for the layman out there like myself, what is that?
It's
layman's
it's,
term.
It's essentially blood collecting. Yeah. We commonly know them as bruises. But here's the thing. Blood can collect, I guess, within soft tissue like muscle. And
yeah.
It's probably a more severe injury
right.
If the blood collects
it's
and,
not just
and can't
boo-boo.
Dissipate.
It's
yes.
not just a boo-boo.
But bruises.
Yeah, bruises. Oh, my goodness.
So, Mr. Kennedy came back. September of 2007, he was suspended for a wellness policy violation because I guess he was potentially involved in some sort of steroid thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then about 2 years later, he was released from WWE, May of 2009, like a couple days after coming back from another injury. because he had a match with Randy Orton, and apparently, I guess, according to Randy Orton, he almost dropped him on his head.
Oh, God.
Doing a back body drop.
Yeah.
And so, according to Mr. Kennedy, Orton and Cena lobbied to have Mr. Kennedy fired.
Well, it was
and
during
he was
a match.
From his contract.
It
yeah.
was during a match with Mr. Kennedy that Cena was injured and forced to, in 2007.
Yeah.
And
tore his pectoral muscle.
And he was forced to vacate the title and he was out. So yeah, Mr. Kennedy. My goodness gracious. Number eight. Corey Graves. This is sad. So Corey Graves, you know, everybody obviously knows him now. He's like, you know, one of the bright spots in the entire announce team for
oh,
Raw.
Yes.
for the WWE, he's on Raw along with Michael Cole and currently Booker T.
And he does 205 Live with Tom Phillips.
Which is fantastic. It, just like it was when they were together on NXT. Yep. They're like best friends, and it's so much fun to watch those guys. And talk about turning, like truly turning a negative into a positive. Because yes. This story of his has got to be one of the most difficult things a person can deal with. So, you know, he was on the independent scene for, I think, around 9 years before he came to NXT. And he got all the old episodes of NXT, I think all of them, all those ones, are all on the network right now. You can check them out. And you can see the kind of treatment that he received. Like, they really were giving him, I'm not going to say, like, superstar treatment, because they gave Seth Rollins the superstar treatment. They even gave Bray Wyatt really, really, like, they understood, like, what they had with Bray Wyatt. Far more than they do now. But still, he was placed into high-profile programs across the board. I mean, he feuded with Rollins and The Shield after The Shield became a thing. He feuded with Bray Wyatt. He became tag team champions with Neville for 3 months. They feuded with The Ascension. They ended up losing their titles.
In 2013,
In 2013, he turned heel on Neville. They feuded. They sort of traded a couple wins and losses back and forth. In October of 2013,
he got a concussion and was out of action for roughly a month.
Exactly.
He came back, had some matches with the various NXT talents, kind of had his, at the time, blow-off match with Neville, January 9th, 2014,
mm-hmm.
About a month before Neville captured the NXT title from Bo Dallas. Corey Graves then moved on to a feud with Sami Zayn. They traded victories.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently Corey Graves suffered his second concussion April 2014, according to WWE.com, during a match at WWE Access.
Oh, God. There is
WrestleMania weekend.
There is no more useless match possible than a match at Access.
Yeah. And so he was out of action between then and his eventual retirement announcement, which mm-hmm. happened December 11th, 2014.
Yeah.
So 8 months later.
Yeah.
During the pre-show for the NXT TakeOver that day. And I believe it was the same night that Neville lost the title to Sami Zayn.
Okay, all right.
On the pre-show panel, Corey Graves announced his retirement. I remember they had this segment in that video package mm-hmm. NXT did for Corey Graves when he left. And when he was obviously, you know, broken up about having to retire.
For sure, yeah.
And when he said it, you heard an audible gasp from someone in the audience.
Yeah.
That they were shocked that he had to retire
at
such a young age. I think he was late 20s, early 30s, something like that.
Yeah.
But as you spoke earlier about someone, you know, taking a moment or a circumstance that would, you know, that's negative and turning it to a positive because, you know, he was great in NXT.
Yeah.
He's been great calling matches on the main roster.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you, so we've always said if you take a look at Seth Rollins early on, take a look at CM Punk when he first showed up in WWE 2009 and you look at his first promo and he talks about, he's introducing himself essentially and he's like the straight edge guy. I don't drink, I don't do drugs, blah, blah, blah. And it's very cheesy. Like it was super cheesy. But, you know, the further on you go, the more comfortable you are with your surroundings. And that's what NXT is all about these days, getting comfortable in your surroundings so that when you debut in main roster, you are polished.
Yes.
When CM Punk came in, you know, you see the polish on the main roster happen. And eventually you get, you know, your 2011 CM Punk, which is fantastic.
Yes.
And you see the same thing with Seth Rollins when he was in NXT. He introduces himself kind of on that first NXT episode of TV that they had, even though he had been in like FCW or whatever. And you get this idea of who he is, and eventually that gets molded into what we know and appreciate and when they're comfortable with it. Corey Graves never got to the point of shedding that and molding that really.
Yeah.
Like he was still a character.
Yes.
If you take a look at, I mean, just look at him. He is one of the most unique looking individuals. His face is all charisma.
Mm-hmm.
His personality is all charisma.
Yes.
And if you turn that up to 11, I can't imagine what his ceiling would have been. Like, I honestly believe. Now, I don't know. We talked about this a little bit while we were doing research for this. you know, they had him in these relatively high profile feuds. I'm not sure if maybe his early concussion or maybe concussions, we don't really know, if that was stuff that like sort of prevented him from instantly being pushed to the NXT title scene.
Yeah, who knows? But you think with his former tag team partner, a wrestler who he just had a feud with,
right,
in Neville, being champion.
And when he came back from that that concussion, he feud with Sami Zayn, another future NXT champion.
Yeah. Like, so you think he might have been at some point put into the title picture, whether it be against Neville or Sami Zayn at some point during the latter half of 2014.
Yeah.
Had he not gotten that second concussion.
Yeah. And it makes you, you know, because there was a, when we were looking up all these, you know, researching this, there was like a video somebody showed of like a match with him, and I think it was Sami Zayn. And you can see, like, he, when he takes a bump, he doesn't tuck his chin all the way, and his, it looks like his head hits flat against the mat. You got to wonder how many concussions that he suffered on the independent circuit. And, you know, there it's like, oh, you know, I'm rattled, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, you know, obviously what matters most is that the guy is going to have a long, healthy life. That's
yes.
what matters most. It's just, man, you see all the tools there.
Yes.
And I guarantee you, he knows that he has all the, that he had all the tools. And you look at guys like Rollins, you look at Zayn, you look at all those guys, and Corey Graves, he had such a great look. Like, he had such a great look. He honestly, like, he kind of reminds me in some superficial ways to Baron Corbin, who has a very unique look.
Yeah.
But Corey Graves is a much better looking guy.
Yeah.
And number two, like,
He's way more charismatic. Not that Corbin is bad on the mic, but Corey Graves is fantastic on the mic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that was just – that's. But, you know, the fact that he was able to turn this negative into a positive and have a stellar – I mean, already a stellar career at commentary, and who knows how much further he can go. Number seven.
Seven.
Wade Barrett. So I was actually kind of surprised. I remember him having more injuries than he actually had, but there were two significant ones.
Yeah, one of them seemed to be at the most inopportune time.
Mm-hmm, right. So,
but before that, especially, you know, you wrote down here that he did have a history of injuries going all the way back to Florida Championship mm-hmm. Wrestling, where he had a torn lat,
mm-hmm.
Which forced him into doing commentary work for 11 months.
Like February to December, I think, 2009.
Wow. Yeah. That's a pretty significant muscle tear.
It was a while, yeah.
But then, you know, he was involved in the first season of NXT,
mm-hmm.
Was a leader of the Nexus, and they had that huge feud with John Cena.
Yeah.
Where John Cena famously buried the Nexus at SummerSlam 2010.
Yeah, I believe it was 2010. He actually had a pretty good run, like even past that. I always think that was sort of the nail in the coffin, but it wasn't like...
No, he had a title match against Cena, or a match against Cena right afterwards.
Yeah, he had their blow up, I think, was at TLC, where Cena literally buried him in 23 chairs, and that's not a metaphor, I don't know what is. But, you know, he did the whole thing with Cena where I think he had a championship match against Orton, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And he told Cena, because Cena lost some match.
And had to join the Nexus, yeah.
And just do it. And so Wade Barrett was like the personal GM to John Cena, because then he had hiring and firing abilities.
Yeah.
John Cena would not help him win the championship match against Orton or something like that. So Wade Barrett ended up firing him. And then Cena just started randomly attacking other members of the Nexus. They couldn't hack it, so they told Wade Barrett, "Then you need to hire this guy or we're out of here."
Yeah.
And so Wade Barrett, who evidently had hiring ability also, rehired John Cena. So he was in some really, really high-profile stuff. Then he was kicked out of Nexus by CM Punk because he took over.
Formed the Core.
Which was like the non-CM Punk Nexus members of the old Nexus.
Yeah.
Which I never even knew. I think they were supposed to be faces, but like nobody, I don't think anybody really knew what they were supposed to be.
Interesting.
And then he had five total Intercontinental reigns,
mm-hmm.
which kind of, again, shows you how they treated the Intercontinental Championship back then, because nobody really important had it. Like, he was important enough to get that title, but they never really... It never felt like a stepping stone. It always felt like he was sort of inching his way down.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, especially with the bad news Barrett gimmick,
mm-hmm.
That was getting over.
There was a lot... I mean, the thing is, he was always hovering around that World Heavyweight Championship scene.
Well, for sure, the Intercontinental title
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, no, but I mean, dude...
Early days, yeah.
When you look at the Wikipedia stuff, he was... And it was the World Heavyweight Championship, not the WWE Championship, which they prized. The other one was like the one that Del Rio had, Christian had, Dolph Ziggler had, and so it was kind of the chump world title belt. And so, but he was kind of hovering
yeah,
around
yeah,
there,
yeah.
you know? And So, yeah, let's see. There was an episode of Raw. Shoot, I missed the date here.
It was in 2012, early 2012.
And there was a Rumble happening.
It was a 10-person tag match, I think, or something like that, a 10-man Rumble.
Oh, it was a 10-man Rumble then, because I know it was a Rumble.
And he was thrown out of the ring by Will. And then into Dolph, I think. And he landed awkwardly.
Yeah.
And he dislocated his elbow. I remember watching this because Lawler was on commentary, and he asked trainers to come out because he thought that Wade Barrett had broken his arm.
Yeah.
Turned out it was a partially dislocated elbow.
Yeah. That kept him out for 6 months.
Yes.
6 months later, I actually thought these were kind of cool. They had some video vignettes of him underground boxing.
Yeah.
He was like in a barn of some sort.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so he was like a bare knuckle brawler. I think they had him grow a beard at that point. So he looked cool. He won IC gold again. But again, he just sort of ended up, when he came back, just sort of milling about. Like, he won the Intercontinental Championship. I think it was from Kofi again, because he won it from the first time from Kofi Kingston. But then they just did a general repackage as Bad News Barrett.
Yes.
That was getting over. You could tell he was having a great time.
Yes, he was.
That was a lot of fun. He ended up being Triple H gave him a spot in the Money in the Bank match that year in June.
It's 2014, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
But before that could happen, he separated his shoulder after getting thrown into a barricade by Jack Thwagger.
And
will show up later on in this
list.
Yes,
he will. Barrett could not participate in that Money in the Bank ladder match, which was eventually won by Seth Rollins.
So it's not like he was really
in the match. No, but just being in the match, as you said, he's always kind of hovering.
Always hovering in the middle. Like
at least at the periphery of the world title scene. Yes,
exactly. I know. And that's kind of, that's above mid-level belt.
Yeah, and he always seemed to be on the precipice of being in line for something.
And by all accounts, it seemed like the WWE were really high on Wade Barrett.
Like, and then he would just get hurt. It seemed like every time that he was on the verge of maybe doing something, he would get hurt.
Yeah.
At least, post-core.
Right. Yeah.
And then he returned in November, won the Intercontinental title for the fifth time, won King of the Ring, became King Barrett, and then he really did nothing after that.
He was a member of
the League of Nations, and he obviously seemed bored with that from the very beginning.
Yeah. And he'd really, trimmed down, too.
I don't even know if he had any singles matches as a member of the League of Nations.
I don't know, man. If
he didn't wrestle much at all.
If he did, it was like... It was to eat pins, probably.
Yeah. And then I believe it was last year he asked for and was granted his release.
Yeah. So,
and he's been doing some movie work, I think.
Yeah, he wanted to take some time out to do some acting.
Yeah.
And he said he might get back in the ring at some point. But he showed up at he's doing commentary for a couple WCPW shows over there. So as Stu Bennett.
Yes.
His real name. So good for him. Hopefully he's good.
Yes.
Number six.
Six.
Sting.
So here's a wrestler, obviously, who had a push derailed by injury, end up doing just fine.
Yeah, totally.
Obviously.
Yeah. I mean, he's the Stinger.
Yeah. So going all the way back to 1988, Sting first challenged Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship at Clash of the Champions, where he wrestled Ric Flair to a 45-minute time limit draw. Apparently, Dusty Rhodes was in charge of booking.
Lethal, baby, yeah.
In WCW back then.
And nobody wins.
Was very high on Sting.
There's no more time, baby.
Yes.
All the time is 45 minutes. That's good.
It expired, huh?
It expired.
Sting was in a lot of high-profile feuds, eventually winning the NWA TV title from Mike Rotunda.
Oh, man. Yeah, man. Bray Wyatt's daddy.
Yep. In March 1989, and entered into a feud with the Great Muda.
Nice.
And Sting eventually dropped the belt, the TV title, to Muda in September of that year. Shortly thereafter, Sting made the save on Ric Flair following his successful title defense against Terry Funk at Great American Bash 89, because Muda and Terry Funk were in the same faction.
Muda.
So Muda came out to the ring to attack Flair. Muda and Sting were rivals.
Mm-hmm.
So, Flair and Sting just kind of formed an alliance based on kind of necessity. But that actually led to Sting joining the Horsemen after Halloween Havoc 1989. And then Sting won a round robin tournament at Starrcade of that year, defeating Flair in the final match and securing himself, Sting that is, an NWA World title shot.
Ooh, but Ric Flair was NWA World Champion.
Yeah.
And they're intrigue. All in the Four Horsemen together.
Tension.
Listen, baby, I've been watching this show called Dallas, and it's all full of twists and turns, and that's what we're going to do.
I think Dallas was on way before that.
Sting, listen. I've been watching reruns.
Oh, okay. So Sting was kicked out of the Horsemen at Clash of Champions 10, which happened early 1990, after he refused to give up his title shot, because why would he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been 2 years, roughly, since he's been trying to get that belt off Ric Flair.
That's right, baby.
And then during that show, the Horsemen took on Gary Hart International, another faction.
Gary Hart was rad. How much do you know about Gary Hart?
Not a lot.
I don't know a lot about him either. However, whenever I've seen him on old episodes of wrestling, whenever I'm watching the WWE Network,
yeah,
he was like, he seemed really cool.
Yeah. I think there might be a book.
I think there is.
About
him. Yeah. Fascinating character. Yeah. But I don't really know Dick about
So it was the Horsemen versus Gary Hart International in a cage match. Towards the end of that match, there was a big scrum. Sting tried to climb up the cage.
Mm-hmm.
During his second attempt, he was yanked off the cage by people and blew out his knee.
Oh, God.
And he would end up missing 5 months of action.
Oh, no, baby.
So we've watched WrestleWar 90, Wild Thing.
Yeah, Wild Thing.
And in that match, the match that Sting was originally supposed to be in and win the NWA World title from Ric Flair, instead Lex Luger was placed in that match. Sting came out during the match to try to help his friend, Lex.
Mm-hmm. The Lex Express.
And rather than concentrate solely on winning the title from Flair, Lex got counted out to help his friend, Sting.
Wow. Lex Luger. What a great friend.
Yeah.
Friend in need is Lex indeed.
Another one of Sting's career highlights happened while he was recuperating from this injury. His program with RoboCop.
Yeah, that's right. This was an amazing advertisement for RoboCop 2, I believe, right?
Yes.
Which is bizarre because WCW is obviously kind of I'm not going to say it's a kid's program, but it was family friendly.
Yeah.
It was family friendly.
RoboCop 2.
Not family friendly. No. That is a sincerely disturbing movie.
It really is.
I've only seen clips on YouTube of like some of the more salacious moments.
I've seen the whole thing.
There's like a little kid, like a little kid criminal who curses up a storm. There's one part where they take like one of the lead bad guys, they take his brain and eyeballs.
Correct.
And like spinal column type thing.
Yeah.
Or his nervous system out of his body.
And put it in a robot.
And well, first they put it in this like little dunk tank thing.
Oh, yeah.
And like he's looking.
Yeah, he still has his eyes. That's the craziest part
about
it.
That's the nastiest part. And you're seeing it from his perspective. And then like the doctor is like holding his head because they like taken off his head and the top of his head.
Yeah.
And he's like looking. That's the darkest S I've ever seen in my life.
I know.
That is messed up.
It really is.
Who came up with this? I think Frank Miller wrote some of that script.
Maybe. I know he did the third one.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. I think they took his script for the second one and turned it into the
third
one.
Could be. Okay. So Sting was still on TV.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a Stone Cold situation. I don't know if it was to that magnitude where Stone Cold was still really heavily involved in, you know, after a short time away, really heavily involved in storylines on a week-to-week basis. I don't know if Sting was on TV as often. But Sting did eventually win the NWA World title from Ric Flair at the Great American Bash 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So he did get the belt. And he went on to have a great illustrious
career.
Oh,
yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And then he got injured out of the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And they went there by Seth Rollins.
Yes.
Because, you know, Seth Rollins, he's an unsafe worker, you know. That's my Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Number five.
Five.
Finn Balor. What a stud. And what a sad. Here's the thing. This is going to be very interesting to talk about. So Finn Balor, inarguably top three most popular NXT alumni. I would probably say number one. I think the WWE would like to think he's number one because he's like front and center on the cover.
The only person offhand I could think that rivals his popularity in NXT, maybe eclipse it, would be Shinsuke.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I would say Shinsuke. I would say maybe Sami Zayn as well. Because Sami Zayn, for the time, he was their guy. He was NXT
guy.
No,
I know.
Let me ask you something. First month on the job, who's been treated better, Finn Balor or Shinsuke Nakamura?
Well, Finn Balor was put immediately into the top program on Raw.
So Finn Balor was the fifth pick he was the first NXT pick, obviously.
I think he was Raw's fifth choice.
Okay. at the draft last year when they split the brands.
Yeah.
And
this is after being the longest reigning NXT champion.
Yeah.
In history.
And coincidentally, around the same time, Roman Reigns was
suspended for a wellness policy violation.
And so apparently part of that punishment was that, but, you know, also to push Finn Balor, kind of killed two birds with one stone, I guess. But they had Finn Balor beat Roman Reigns clean when they were doing this tournament. This yeah, mini tournament.
Well, they had two fatal four-way matches. Mm-hmm. One of them saw Finn defeat Rusev, Cesaro, and Kevin Owens.
Right.
And then Reigns took on three other competitors. I don't remember who they were offhand. And then the main event of that night's Raw, which is Finn Balor's very first Raw.
Mm-hmm, right.
The main event was Roman versus Finn, and Finn won clean.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And it was shocking. But everybody kind of knew. Everybody kind of knew. It was like,
yeah,
well, this is because he's being punished. But, I mean, it honestly, it seems like they really wanted to push Finn to
yes,
the moon.
Yes, definitely. So that victory earned Finn an opportunity to face Seth Rollins for the Universal title at SummerSlam last year.
Correct.
During that match, early in that match,
yeah.
They were battling on the outside. Seth Rollins did his buckle bomb, but instead of to the turnbuckle, it was to the barrier outside the ring.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like Finn kind of got... He was trying to put his arms over the barrier to take the impact flat on his back, but it looked like one of his arms kind of got pinned behind him.
Yeah.
He ended up dislocating his shoulder and tearing his labrum.
Yeah.
And he's listed other injuries he suffered because of that spot.
Yeah.
He ended up popping his shoulder back in place, finished the match, won the Universal title.
Yeah.
But the next night on Raw, he had to give up the belt.
Wow. Yeah.
Didn't return until the Raw after Mania this year, 2017.
Now, of course, in the interim, we had the Lesnar-Goldberg thing for the Universal title. Lesnar now has the Universal title. Word on the street is they want Reigns to take it off of Lesnar at WrestleMania. And in the meantime, Lesnar might be beating on the road to WrestleMania such opponents as Seth Rollins and Finn Balor, perhaps, and Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
It seems like right now the Intercontinental Championship is sort of a logical place for Finn to be looking if he wants gold.
Yes.
If WWE wants to do that.
Within the next year or so, yes.
I would think that one way or the other, you think that one way or the other, Lesnar Goldberg for the Universal title would have happened regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Finn would have lost that title.
Well, once Goldberg decided to sign on for more than one match, mm-hmm. yes, I think that would have been the plan regardless.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. It remains to be seen. I would like to know if there was a rumor or something that he was concussed in the gender match.
Yeah.
But he
downplayed that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that injury of the shoulder thing might have given them pause. Sometimes WWE, once you're injured a couple times, they're like, well, we're not going to
put... You get the injury-prone label.
Yeah, exactly. Or at least, hey, we can push you, but we're not going to push you to the moon.
Yes, as we'll see from our next entry.
Number four!
Four!
Dolph Ziggler!
I was a huge, huge, huge fan of Dolph.
Everybody was, man.
Yeah. Back then, 2012, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very excited when he won the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Everybody wanted this from Dolph because everybody knew he was the best worker.
Yes.
Like, he would sell like nobody's business. He was, I mean, honestly, he was, if you think about it, he was a bit ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Because although he was sort of modeling his own in-ring work after Shawn Michaels, a lot of guys now obviously pride themselves on their selling ability, which
yes.
for a long time wasn't the case.
No.
Dolph was a standout in that regards.
Yeah. So he had a match. It was he and Big E, I believe, taking on Team Hell No for the tag team championships at WrestleMania 29.
Mm-hmm.
The night after, Alberto Del Rio had a match. Following that match, Dolph came out, cashed in his briefcase.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was against Jack Swagger.
Okay.
And to a thunderous ovation.
Oh, yeah, big time. People pop massive for that.
Won the World Heavyweight Championship.
He had a really cool... Dolph had a really fun sort of run as that sort of heel with AJ Lee, and then when they brought Big E.
Yeah.
That was a really fun package.
Yeah, it really
right
was.
There. That
it
was
really
a really
was.
Great package.
And so... But he suffered a concussion after he was kicked in the head by Jack Swagger.
Mm.
On the May 10th episode of SmackDown, which caused him to miss his scheduled title defense at Extreme Rules against Del Rio.
Yeah.
He was off TV for about a month. due to that concussion.
Yeah.
And then he defended his title against Alberto Del Rio at Payback 2013. Again, Payback 2013.
Yeah.
Very important pay-per-view
in
wrestling history.
The most important pay-per-view in wrestling history.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
During that match, it was a double turn.
Yeah,
Del Rio
went
heel.
That was a hell of a match, yeah.
And Dolph turned face, and Del Rio, like, really worked Dolph's head, really played up the concussion storyline.
Yeah, awful idea.
Yeah. Del Rio won the belt that night.
I always get the feeling whenever they work a body part that is like both legitimately messed up and storyline messed up, and so they work it in storyline, it's just more apt to like hurt that body part.
I would think so.
Especially
concussions.
So. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
But since then, Dolph, apart from SummerSlam of last year, when he challenged for the WWE title against Dean Ambrose, he hasn't really sniffed the world title scene, and even that feud last year, while Dolph did good work in his promos, you knew he wasn't going to win.
He did great work in his promos, but you knew there was not a shot in heck that he was going to win that thing.
And since his that world title reign, he's had the Intercontinental title on a few occasions, and there was hope that he was going to get another huge push, because in Survivor Series 2014, he was a part of Team Cena, and he was the last survivor of that team.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun.
It seemed like a huge moment. And granted, Sting came out to help him win, but it still felt like a huge moment. It could have been a really good springboard to do something, you know, a la what happened back when he cashed in Money in the Bank.
That's one of the most random things ever. Sting helped him win.
I know.
I know. It's funny. Like a lot of people say, and probably correctly, that Dolph can really never, like, Dolph has literally been ruined because of that, like, in terms of viewing him as a legit main eventer. I thought that, like, he had an opportunity when SmackDown Live was in its infancy last year. Obviously, he had the thing with Ambrose, but his Intercontinental program with The Miz was so well done.
And then, he won the belt off The Miz at No Mercy.
No Mercy.
Match that should have been the main event.
No, for sure. Yeah. We were there.
Yeah.
No Mercy.
And then like a month later, he randomly dropped it back to The Miz. So The Miz can have a match against Sami Zayn at Survivor Series.
Yeah. I felt like they really could have
done something with it.
To use this parlance again, killed two birds with one stone. It was kind of silly them having him drop the title so soon to The Miz. But I mean, I guess they could have done that if the plan was to move Miz up the ladder a little bit, Dolph up the ladder, or, you know, vice versa. If Dolph would have kept the belt, bring Miz up the ladder a little bit, you know, for the world title scene. Now it's all like, it's so stacked up there. It's never going to happen.
Yes.
He'll have a really good match against Shinsuke at Backlash. That should be a lot of fun.
It's just a bummer that we never got to see a real title reign.
I know.
From Dolph.
I know.
Because he could have put on some really quality matches with a lot of different people.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It could have been really interesting.
Could have been a lot of fun. Number three.
Three.
Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Wow.
His victory at WrestleMania 30 is, without a doubt, one of the most iconic wins, title wins, in WrestleMania history.
One of the most
iconic title win.
Yeah. It seemed like immediately they started botching that one, though.
Yeah, because his first feud afterwards was with Kane. Granted, they had history as Team Hell No. But considering he just came off beating Triple H, Randy Orton, and Batista all in the same night.
Yeah.
It seems like they could have found a stronger opponent for him.
Well, I feel like I always felt like they treated the world heavyweight champion, Daniel Bryan, as the secondary feud happening on the show. And I went to look at the lineup for Extreme Rules because he, that would have been 2012, 13?
I think 14.
14? Okay. I went to look at the lineup for that, and because he fought Kane there.
Yes.
I forgot that he actually lasted as long as
I'm he had that one title defense, yeah.
Yeah, he had one title defense. And let's see here. Who was in the actual like main event? Who was the thing here? So Daniel Bryan beat, I wanted to say, Bray Wyatt versus John Cena, I think, and then you had the Shield versus Evolution. So you had these, like, Cena and Wyatt, and then you had the Shield Evolution, and those just felt more important than Daniel Bryan.
Well, you
because
knew
he was facing Kane.
Yeah, you knew Kane had no chance of winning.
Like, at that point, so the Shield were faces at that point.
Yes.
It's like, why not the next night Evolution come out? Why not? Why wasn't Triple H supremely pissed? I mean, I know they put him in a thing with Kane. They had Kane come out and like choke slam through a table or some crap like that.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it should have been, they should have maybe continued the Evolution versus Daniel Bryan thing.
Yes.
Like kept the underdog thing going.
Like have Evolution plus Kane versus Daniel Bryan in the Shield.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Do something like that.
And maybe, but we never know. Maybe that was in the cards.
Yeah.
We don't know because shortly after Extreme Rules, Daniel Bryan had to relinquish the world title.
He lost feeling in one of his arms.
Because of a neck injury. Yeah.
Because of a neck injury. June 9th, the authorities stripped him of the title because he can no longer compete.
And he was out for almost a year.
Yeah. Yeah. And you would always hear updates. Well, the strength in the feeling in his arm, the strength in his arm just isn't getting any better.
Yeah.
And it was like months later.
Yes.
And you were, oh my God, this is terrible.
Yep.
Anyways, he came back, I believe in December, he announced that he would be available. He's going to be entering the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
He did that. He came out to huge fanfare.
Yeah.
Like it was a Philly crowd. So yeah. They're crazy hot. And then he was eliminated by Bray Wyatt after he got to eliminate one person. Crowd booed the crap out of it.
Really, if he wasn't going to win the Royal Rumble, they shouldn't have had him in it.
Exactly. Roman Reigns did win the Royal Rumble, and even The Rock, our next president of the United States, could not get
Roman Reigns over.
He couldn't get Roman Reigns over.
That year's WrestleMania 31,
mm-hmm.
Saw Daniel Bryan win the Intercontinental title
mm-hmm.
in a ladder match.
Fantastic ladder match.
Very fun match.
Yeah.
But then was had a concussion at the hands of Sheamus.
Yeah.
I don't remember the spot. I'm pretty sure I've seen
it. I remember it was on the outside of the ring, and yes. I think Wade Barrett was involved too.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
Like, he was mixing up with Wade Barrett, then he turns around and gets a bro kick. Something like that. It's probably not that, but I think it was something like that.
Yeah. So anyways, because of that, he eventually had to retire because WWE would never clear him to wrestle again.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, the thing is, and this is an interesting quote from Dave Meltzer here when he was talking about Bryan's retirement. He said, "Professional wrestling is a far better place because of his involvement. There were things dating back to 2001 that he was involved with that changed the underground foundation of the industry, and over the past few years significantly changed talent evaluation at the highest level of the industry." That is a fascinating statement right there.
Really is.
Because guys like him, Samoa Joe, Cesaro, all those kind of guys really did lay a foundation for what is now the top level entertainment in WWE.
Yes.
Number two.
Two.
Shibata. Oh, just saying his name hurts my head, Larson.
Yeah.
So he's had an interesting career. Of course, we are referring, when we talk about Shibata, to the nasty headbutt that allegedly caused a subdural hematoma.
Yes, he had some blood pooling on his brain, I believe right between the brain and the membrane that covers the brain.
Right, and this was at the...
this was during Sakura Genesis 2017, during his match against Okada.
And it was a fantastic, very stiff match. Now, the thing about Shibata is that he had a 8-year MMA career.
Yes.
So his thing is stiff working. His thing is, I'm MMA guy. I can beat you up for reals. He's kind of, I mean, in some ways, that's sort of a parallel to the Brock Lesnar thing. You know, he's legit. We know he's legit.
He took up professional wrestling all the way back in 2000.
Mm-hmm, right. He came up with Shinsuke Nakamura. And
Tanahashi.
Tanahashi, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this is kind of interesting. In 2000, he took part in the 2000 Young Lion Cup. As you guys know or may not know, Young Lion is what they call the rookies in New Japan. He finished third place, but during the tournament, he was involved in an incident where he hit Masakazu Fukuda with an elbow drop during a match. Fukuda was in a coma and died 4 days later in the hospital. Now, I'm not sure that really relates to how he sort of approached his own style in terms of working stiff. That sounds like it was just sort of a messed up thing.
I think it's Deadspin has an interesting article.
Really? Okay.
That was inspired by Shibata's injury going back through wrestling and talking about head injuries specifically.
Yeah.
Sorry, Shibata made his debut in New Japan in 1999.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. But that gives you like a little bit of background on like the guy obviously appreciates the stiffer things in pro wrestling. In 2004 to 2011, he took time away from pro wrestling and developed an MMA career. You know, his record wasn't great. It was 4 wins, 10 losses, but, you know, MMA is no joke.
No.
On March 20th of this year, Shibata defeated Bad Luck Fale in the finals to win the 2017 New Japan Cup.
Which led to the main event match at Sakura Genesis against Okada. And then, you know, there's a headbutt spot where it was, you know, just this horrible thud that you heard watching it.
What'd they say it sounded like? A baseball bat cracking or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. I think that's what Meltzer reported in the newsletter about people who were in attendance live.
Yeah, and they were all like, ugh.
I know.
That sounded gross.
And so following his loss, he kind of stumbled backstage.
By the way, is Okada made of, like, pure steel?
He must be.
How did he absorb that? And he was, from what we can tell.
Well, I think part of it, too, you know, Meltzer mentions this, that it was not just the headbutt, but also dehydration.
Oh, right.
And then that's Kenny Omega talked about it and said that Shibata had been working an insane schedule.
Oh, man.
So it was a combination, I guess, of fatigue, dehydration, and just the headbutt. Because Omega said, if Shibata hadn't been working so hard, he could have taken 10 headbutts and been just fine.
That's really interesting. Gee whiz, that's interesting.
That's Kenny's perspective.
Yeah.
So anyways, after the match, Shibata collapsed backstage, taken to the hospital, had emergency surgery on the subdural hematoma, and he had some paralysis on the right side of his body, which I believe, according to the last report, hasn't resolved itself completely yet.
Yeah. Ugh.
So it seems like he's done. And it seemed like he was really on the verge of getting pushed up into the main event.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what Meltzer said time and time again, that he was going to be in their top five.
Yeah.
You know, which I can only speculate. I mean, you know, it's Okada, Naito,
Omega, Tanahashi, and Shibata. Shibata.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, he could have been a pretty consistent main event player and a world title contender.
I would have thought, depending on what Kenny Omega's sort of contractual status, how that would work itself out, it would make all the sense in the world if Shibata was world champion by the end of the year.
Oh, yes.
Maybe Wrestle Kingdom next year. Number one.
One.
Magnum T.A.
We've talked about Magnum T.A. quite a bit recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he only had about 6 years in the business.
Yeah, he started.
Yeah, about 6 years.
He started his pro wrestling career in 1980 at the age of 19, but it wasn't until 1984 that Jim Crockett Promotions signed Terry Allen to a contract, and they dubbed him Magnum T.A.
Yeah, and he was poised, it seemed almost immediately, to be in line for a massive push.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so he within a year, he would win the United States Championship.
Oh, this match is great. The Tully Blanchard one.
Wahoo McDaniel, and then he had an I Quit match with Tully Blanchard. It got really bloody.
Yeah, it did. That I remember Starrcade 85.
Was that in a cage?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember that.
That was Starrcade 85. That's a great match.
Okay, all right. In the summer of 1986, Magnum TA lost a best-of-seven series with Nikita Koloff. He was in line. I think he's at the time in October. So I did a little bit of research on this.
He was still U.S. champion this time, right?
I think he lost the championship to Koloff.
Yeah.
At this time, but he was talking in October about December Starrcade about going in there and taking the title off him there.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure they had that lined up. On October 14th, 1986, he was driving his Porsche. He had dropped off, I want to say, Tully Blanchard at a bar.
Okay.
And
he lost control of his Porsche and hit a telephone pole.
According to him, his Porsche hit a big thing of water, started a hydroplane, and he had been told that if you're in a Porsche and that happens, tap the gas and that'll help correct it. Well, he did that, and he said the damn thing just shot like a bullet across the street. He said he was lucky no other car was driving by, but he ended up hitting the pole on the driver's side. He was laying there anywhere between 1 and 2 hours, just laying there. Nobody came by. And eventually they did, according to, I think this is just Wikipedia, but according to this, the accident caused his C4 and C5 vertebrae to, quote, explode.
It's right here.
That's not good.
No. So, he was paralyzed for months, and obviously his in-ring career ended.
Yeah.
And he had to go through the process of learning how to walk again.
Now, we had always heard that he had been, like, groomed to be a world champion. There's some sort of debate about this. I would suspect that he would have become world champion, and I'll tell you why. But I did some research. I was on some Reddit threads that talked about this, and it seems obvious that he, you know, just through his dude was incredibly charismatic.
Yes.
Like he was like freaking, you know, they called him Magnum TA, but you honestly could see like Magnum PI.
Yeah.
Like he's got the Tom Selleck look. Like yeah. He looked amazing.
Yeah.
But when you look at how the NWA was booked and their world championship was booked versus like WWF, now it's possible he could have gone to WWF and had like a massive career there as world champ. Yeah. But Flair was holding on to that title so much. Dusty was the booker. Dusty would usually book himself as lead face, but then Dusty was also a huge Sting fan.
Yes.
And you can see how well he booked Sting in the late 80s.
Yeah, this was starting in 88, yeah.
So this was like a precursor to that. Now, Flair did actually lose the world title to... Oh, crap, who was it?
Here, keep going, I'll find out.
Anyways, he did lose the title to... Ronnie Garvin.
Okay.
Ronnie Garvin.
Yes.
Around like 87. And it's entirely possible that slot might have gone.
Yeah, that was September of 1987.
Okay. That might have gone to Magnum TA. That was a really quick turnaround there, though. Like Ric Flair got it back within 2 months.
In a month.
But.
Oh, sorry. 2 months. Yeah.
But if Magnum TA was supremely over, which he was supremely over. I could see that as having lasted longer. Maybe he would have gotten it early. Maybe he would have won it earlier. I mean, anecdotally, there's evidence to suggest that once Magnum TA was injured, that crowd just died. Like they said a couple weeks later, they had to turn Nikita Koloff face. Dusty turned Nikita Koloff face. And the crowd was like, there was like half the people there.
Wow.
Like Magnum TA was a big deal. There is some debate as to how big a deal he was, but he seemed to have been a pretty big deal.
Here, I'm going to make a comment here about the schedule Ric Flair was working from 1984 to 1989. So on May 24th, 1984, he won the belt and held it for 793 days.
Oh my gosh.
And then about 2 years later, he won it again. Held it for 412 days.
And that's after he lost it for 14 days.
Yes.
So he held it for 793 days.
He needed a two-week break.
Got
it back.
Yeah.
And then he dropped it to Ronnie Garvin for 2 months. Got it back at Starrcade.
Held it for
87,
a year and a half.
And held it for 452 days.
Yeah.
He and Steamboat had their classic rivalry. Steamboat had it for 76 days, and Flair had it again for 426 days before dropping it to Sting in 1990,
yeah,
where Sting had it for about a half a year, and then Flair got it back.
So you can kind of see the point. Like NWA booked their world champions to be heel. Like Ric Flair was like supreme heel,
yeah,
and they like their baby faces to be chasing the world title. Now, I would imagine Magnum TA would have won. Like maybe he could have been in the Steamboat position. Maybe he could have been in the Ronnie Garvin position. I don't know, but you know, if he would have been, you know, lead face, you know, I could see how he might have had at least a world title run for a couple months until Ric Flair got it back for another year and a half.
I know.
So, I mean, the bottom line is, like, he was a name for 2 years, like from 84 to 86.
Pretty huge name, yeah.
He had built himself into a pretty massive, you know, train, and it was just completely derailed. It just completely got cut short. Who knows? I mean, God, he'd only been in for 6 years total, two years in Jim Crockett Promotions. And so there's, you know, I think it's not difficult to say he could have had a skyrocketed career.
Yes.
And, you know, again, like we mentioned this earlier, having to learn how to, like with Corey Graves, having to learn how to sort of step back and see everybody. He was making $500,000 a year. His Porsche was a $50,000 car.
Wow.
And that was back in 1984 or 86. So to step back and see the world continue, that world continue, and deal with that and learn how to, you know, basically be a human the way you knew how to be a human before has to have been just absolutely devastating.
I know.
But he pulled through. He's still alive today.
Yeah.
So, there you go. There are 10 wrestlers who had their pushes derailed thanks to injuries. We don't like when that happens.
No.
So hopefully we don't see that happen for a while yet.
Yes.
That's it for now. For Countout tomorrow, we got something special. We got a book of the match for tomorrow, right?
Yeah, we should probably think of a better name for that show.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll figure it out. Where we're going to start reviewing old, obscure, or not obscure pay-per-views.
Yes.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Yes.
Until then, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.